Once the Newtons and Mr. Rose were gone, we were, to quote Mr. Cooper, as quiet as dormice in a hollow tree. It was not to last. In October, Lady Hesketh arrived, and she stayed until the 20th of January, 1789.
The Dog and the Water Lily. The noon was shady, and soft air swept Ooze's silent tide, when, scape from literary cares, I wandered on his side. My spaniel, prettiest of his race, and high in pedigree, two nymphs adorned with every grace that spaniel found for me. Now wantoned lost in flags and reeds, now starting into sight, pursued the swallow o'er the meads with scarce a slower flight. It was the time when Ooze displayed his lilies newly blown. Their beauties I intent surveyed, and one I wish my own. With cane extended far I sought to steer it close to land, but still the prize, though nearly caught, escaped my eager hand. Bow marked my unsuccessful pains with fixed considerate face, and puzzling set his puppy brains to comprehend the case. But with a chirrup, clear and strong, dispersing all his dream, I thence withdrew, and followed long the windings of the stream. My ramble finished, I returned. Bow trotting far before, the floating wreath again discerned, and plunging left the shore. I saw him, with that lily cropped, impatient swim to meet my quick approach, and soon he dropped, the treasure at my feet. Charmed with the sight, "The world," I cried, "shall hear of this thy deed. My dog shall mortify the pride of man's superior breed. But chief myself I will enjoin, awake at duty's call, to show a love as prompt as thine to him who gives me all."
As Mr. Cooper grew more famous for his poems, Lady Hesketh encouraged her cousin to compose poetry that would reflect well upon the Cooper family name, and by, herself. To assist Lady Hesketh in gaining the attention of the renowned Mrs. Montagu, Mr. Cooper composed the poem On Mrs. Montagu's Feather Hangings. Conversely, to ensure that her own aspiration to be close to the King and Queen of England was not spoilt, she purged and pruned from Mr. Cooper's poetry any suggestion of disaffection. The King and Queen proved easier to befriend than the redoubtable Mrs. Montagu. Lady Hesketh stayed at Weston until mid-January 1789. On the day before she departed, I stepped onto the gravel walkway, which was covered in ice. I fell awkwardly, and pain shot through my leg. I fainted right away and awoke in the lodge to find my leg quite useless. I was confined to my room for 2 weeks. Hannah, by now about 14, was a great help to me. She slept in a closet near my bed and got up twice, or even 3 times in the night, to come to my aid. And come the new day, she attended to making black lace for a cloak, as though she had slept peacefully. By the 10th of February, I was able to go downstairs for the first time, but rarely any further. I heard the rockets fly from the Throckmorton bonfires in March, but I did not join Mr. Cooper outdoors. Poor Mr. Cooper regretted going himself when he caught a cold. The King, George III, had been near death. Upon his recovery in April, the Throckmortons held a ball. Hannah was invited and had a wonderful time. The hall welcomed the young relatives of Mrs. Throckmorton in May. Mr. Cooper invited several of them round to the lodge. A game of spillikins was held and enjoyed by all, except for Tom, who behaved just as one should at 2 months old, and fell asleep. Lady Hesketh returned at the end of June, along with Samuel Rose. Then November came, and we were alone again. It was quite a miserable winter. Mr. Throckmorton had gout, and Mrs. Throckmorton had a cold. While my leg was slowly improving, I had a terrible pain in my side. Dear Mrs. King heard of my sickness from Mr. Cooper, and sent me a coconut. It did me a lot of good, although nothing quite eases my head like lemonade.
William Cooper to Samuel Rose, the 22nd of November, 1789. We are now reduced from our square table to a small oval one, and from a party of sometimes 4 and sometimes 3 to our original duality. London is not only an abomination in my account because it runs away with my friends, but because it steals them at a season when we should be especially glad of their company. But if we will live in the country, we must be contented to bear the inconveniences of a situation which is not chargeable with many. Perhaps I have named the only one of importance. For though the trees are now leafless, the days short and gloomy, and the walks dirty, there never was nor will be that metropolis on earth which I would prefer to the country, even in this condition.
As news of Mr. Cooper's new translation of Homer spread, the subscriptions increased. They would eventually exceed the costs of printing, and Mr. Cooper would then ask that no more money be sent. The Lord Chancellor, Edward Thurlow, chose to subscribe for 2 copies. It was not the expected preferment, but it touched Mr. Cooper after a silence of more than 30 years. But there were even older acquaintances waiting to embrace their increasingly famous relation. The Dunn family, his mother's ancestors, whom he had not seen since he was a boy. Johnny Johnson was one of the first. He was at Cambridge, and although he would go on to become a minister of the church, he was at that time studying branches of mathematics with middling success. The wit and guileless charm of Johnny made Mr. Cooper treat him like a son more than a cousin. Lady Hesketh met and approved of him, procuring him a position as chaplain to Bishop Spencer Madden. Next came Mr. Cooper's cousin, Rose Bodham. She was the daughter of his mother's brother. Her initial contact brought back more than just the powerful memories of a little boy called William playing with a little girl called Rose. For Mrs. Bodham sent to Mr. Cooper a picture of his mother, giving him sight of her face for the first time in more than 50 years. Sorrow, love, and sweet remembrances combined, and Mr. Cooper poured his recollections into a poem in honour of his mother.
Where once we dwelt, our name is heard no more. Children, not thine, have trod my nursery floor. And where the gardener robin day by day drew me to school along the public way, delighted with my bauble coach and wrapped in scarlet mantle warm, and velvet capped, 'tis now become a history little known, that once we called the pastoral house our own.
The long summer ended, and in September 1790, Homer was finished. The lengthy process of printing began. Mr. Cooper did not have time to feel the absence of his former pursuit, because the lodge was soon filled by the arrival of Johnny Johnson and Lady Hesketh. Meanwhile, the hall had its children come to stay. Tommy, who had slept through our game of spillikins, was now growing tall and bashful. He liked Mr. Cooper best of all, and trotted round the garden to collect flowers for him. But he could not bring himself to say his name, and called him Toot. The holiday time did not suit Mr. Cooper. He wanted to write. So he took up John Milton, and set about translating once more. Unhappy news came in December 1790. Our Throckmorton neighbours had to move to the family seat in Bucklands to become Sir and Lady upon the recent death of Mr. Throckmorton's brother. We would keep some Throckmortons nearby, but not until the next brother was married. It would leave a great hole in our daily lives. My friend, Mrs. Mary Newton, went to glory that same month. Molly, our cook, seemed to be on the point of dying, and then I suffered a stroke. Poor Mr. Cooper had yet another winter as nurse. Lady Hesketh had come to stay and brought rheumatism with her, so he passed between the two of us, month after month.
William Cooper to Johnny Johnson, the 7th of June, 1790. Pursue what you know to be attainable. Make truth your object, and your studies will make you a wise man. Let your divinity, if I may advise, be the divinity of the glorious Reformation. I mean in contradistinction to Arminianism and all the other isms that were ever broached in this world of error and ignorance.
Sam Roberts helped Mr. Cooper to get me walking. It was terribly slow. I needed Sam's wife Nanny and dear Hannah to help me in many other ways. They still had all of their work as cook and maid to attend to. so I was glad that we did not have more guests at the lodge, for their sakes.